Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
Listening to Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown, back again. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at tre.radio, new email. Studio at tre.radio is the email, and the Facebook page is the same, which is Talk Radio Europe Official. Always loud, always lively here on Viewpoint. Good to be back. Joining me in the studio, Alf Brewer, Andres Gallardo, and Nathan Thomas. We're going to continue on the conversation we were having before the break, but first going live to the lines. 952-78-4000. Good morning, caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
From the Costa Blanca, from Cayosa.
Good morning, Karen.
Just 2 points I want to make. We've always had immigration. The Germans, they had immigration from Turkey, because they, in England, we had immigration from not only Jamaica as the bus drivers years ago after the war, but also we've always had immigration. I think the reason UKIP got in was because of the British generosity, which has already been spoken about. People that were coming, if I was escaping, you know yourself, if you were escaping for a country where you were being oppressed and you had no food, and I got to France or Spain, the first thing I'd do was I'd try and find work or something. No, what they want to do is get to Britain, because if they get to Britain, they get housing, has been already mentioned, and stuff like this. The reason UKIP got in was because the British people were fed up with this generosity of, and so what happened was UKIP got in, and then they broke from the European Common Market because they thought they were at fault. But controlled immigration works, because we have it in Spain. I've lived here now 35 years, and we have it in Spain. We get people coming over from Morocco and Romania also. They start picking the fruit. And because why? The Spanish people don't want to do it. So they pick the fruit, and they are controlled, and they go from A to B to C to D. They pick the tomatoes and da-da. And it is totally, totally controlled. But also, another point is, you can also do what Australia does. You can't go into Australia, which is a very big country. You can't go into Australia, or years ago you could for 10 quid, but you can't go into Australia or New Zealand now unless you can prove you have enough money in your pocket to keep yourself and keep your family, and then you've got a prospect of a job. And that's coming from any country. That's not just coming from Britain or Spaniards or anywhere in the world. That's the control that they've got in Australia and New Zealand.
Carol, thanks for your call in there. 952-78-4000, the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email. The Facebook page, studio at tre.radio is the email. The Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official. Andres.
Yeah, okay.
With regards to immigration, let's separate immigration here in the UK from EU countries and non-EU countries. The EU countries, the great majority, and I'm talking large majority, I would happy to be in the 90% upwards, go to the UK because there are jobs available for them. They tend to be young people. They tend to be there between 6 months and 12 months. They go there, they do a job, learn a bit of English, and go back to their original country. They don't go there to claim any benefit. They hardly use the health system because they tend to be youngsters, and they go away after they've done their work and pay their taxes. Now, I don't see a problem with that. In fact, the UK and other countries in the EU need that type of immigration. Then there is a second type of immigration, which is the illegal immigration and the refugee status immigration. That's a different matter where the politicians have to decide how to manage that type of immigration. The caller said that in Spain we have managed immigration. No, we don't. No country has got full control of the immigrants. And you go to the street and you see how many illegal immigrants are around selling handbags and all sorts of things. And that's illegal immigration. So, yes, there is an issue, but again, it is something that is needed for Western countries to move forward.
Alf.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to Steve originally because Steve was saying that Angela Merkel got herself into trouble because of the immigration policy of trying to bring... Yeah, the Germans need a workforce. Traditionally, it wasn't just Turkey. It was Turkey, Poland, Romania, Serbia, lots of Eastern Bloc countries, illegal immigration, lots of that serviced the German motor car industry for many, many years. Of course, then what happens is we end up with Syria. Merkel was seeing a solution for part of the problem of Syria and the people trying to escape Syria, and she opened her doors. Not only them, Sweden. Talk to the Swedish people. They hate what's going on. Flooded out with people from, you know, from North Africa. What they can't control and why it's uncontrollable, as was just explained, is because they're not all from Syria. They all come through Syria, but loads of them come from other North African countries, just channeled through Syria and escape into Europe. So Merkel got herself into a bit of a problem because the German population was saying no different to Britain. We're not taking this flood of people in uncontrolled, taking our jobs away. And you go, well, they're not probably taking your jobs away. You will need them eventually to pay for your pensions and your health service and all that in the future. They're actually taking the jobs away from the Turkish, who desperately want to be part of the European Union. The second part of the conversation, you know, we go back to this UKIP thing. You just have to go, it's elections. I don't know why people listen to the blurb that comes out at election times and don't go, liars. UKIP lied. UKIP will always lie because it's an election. Boris Johnson, £350 million for the NHS and Brexit. Lie. You know, it's all lies. But people succumb to the lies. People will believe whatever they want to believe. So what you found with them is that the lies that they say were things like, you'll get a free house, you'll get a car. I remember at one stage they said, oh, you come over and we provide transport for you. If we can't give you a car, you can get a taxi. And on top of that, you can get a benefit. My sister-in-law said to me she was more concerned that people could come in from Europe, get into the benefit system, however long they wait, get child benefit, but their children were living in the country that they'd come from. And they were allowed to send the money for their children back to the country where they came from. You go, but it's their kids. They're getting child benefit because they're entitled to it under the UK system. This, you know, as Nathan described it, how wonderfully good the UK population is by giving all its money to everybody else. And they allow you to, no, that's no different to me living in Spain and having, you know, dependents in the UK, getting money off the Spanish government because I'm entitled to it for child benefit and sending it back to the UK. What's the difference? There is none. This is this universal understanding. But people will see it and they'll go, I don't want that. I don't like that. I never voted for that. I never did. The number of times that I've heard, I didn't vote for this sort of Europe. Then you go, did you vote Tory? Well, yeah. Well, then you voted for this sort of Europe.
Andres.
The
reality of these benefits paid to people in their original countries and all of that, the scale of the problem is so small. It's not something that the majority of people do. The reality of immigration is completely different to what the media, and here is where I have to make stress the point, it's the media who've been taking these cases and making it as if it was the general rule. When it's not, it's only a minority of people who might have dodged the system and managed to get a little bit more benefit here and there. And yes, the cases could be quite attractive to the media, but the reality of it is the scale of the problem is very, very tiny.
Also, it's not, people aren't looking at this. This is all a bit real illegal, and it's the illegal stuff. So when you talk to British people about benefits, never mind about foreigners, it was UK people, English people, scroungers. That's what they were called. They're on the benefit system, they're scroungers. And you got, you total it all up, less than 2% of the money involved in benefits and benefit frauds, it would have cost more, which is always the argument. Let's have a civil servant in. We'll call him an inspector. We'll send him around to knock at the house and find out that this bloke who should be at work is claiming, you know, sickness benefit. He should be at work. It would have cost the country billions to employ all these bloody investigators for such a... And I'm agreeing with you. 1%... 1% of the UK economy was involved in illegal and illegal benefits.
But again, what you're doing is then making up rules, laws, whatever, that are basically unenforceable. Yep. And there is, in any society, a percentage of people who will find a loophole. And like you say, it costs them more to enforce it than it is to just pay out the money. And people will find that, and people will take advantage of it. But yes, it is generally a small percentage, or the country would fall apart.
I'm
not saying that it's right. I'm not saying that the people who do that are they should do it.
No.
The problem is that you cannot make decisions like leaving the European Union or other decisions, important decisions, based on a very small problem that has been magnified by the media.
And they did.
And people will believe, like I said, people will believe whatever they want to believe. It doesn't matter what we think. It's what the individual... And they go to the ballot box and they go, I don't like that. There's my X. I'm voting for this. Just that one point you said about 90% of the people who come to the UK and jobs and all the rest of it. I think the estimate, because it can only be an estimate, about 100,000 people from the Indian subcontinent, mostly Indians, go to the UK for the education system, universities. In order to do that, they get a visa. They're the only people that get visas, proper visas, time-expired visas. 100,000 illegal entries into the UK come from those when they run out of their visas or they finish their education or they just disappear into the woodwork. That's because there's, was it 2.8 million Indians, 1 million Pakistanis, 500,000 Bangladeshis?
Well, it's because they have created rules or laws or whatever that they can't enforce.
Absolutely. Well, they can enforce them because it's an island. So you employ an inspector to go around and knock on the house and say, show us your visa.
But that makes it unenforceable.
Yeah,
if the cost of enforcing it is greater than what you're paying out for the corruption, if you will, then you're not going to enforce it. But that's the problem, is you've created a way of doing something, a system, that you can't control.
And you can't come into Spain today, by the way, unless you can guarantee that you can cover your own health expenses. Can't come in. Well, you can come in, but you're not covered by the Spanish Health Authority.
Yeah, but if you go to a hospital, no. They will too.
No, not true. My daughter's boyfriend is going through it at the moment, and if he goes to the doctors or the hospital, they send him to the private hospital.
Hold on a second, because this was a rule by central government, but the regional governments who run the health system have said that they will respect the universal...
Only for A&E.
Let's go to the lines again. 952-784-4000. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Giles and the panel and everybody listening. It's Jason speaking.
Morning, Jason.
Right, what a topsy-turvy world we live in. If I go back to the UK after many years here, I don't know how many months it is till I even get it down. On the other side of the coin, you've got ex-forces people living on the street, right, who are in... more deserve, you could say, having served the country than some of the people we take in. The National Health Service is creaking at the bleeding seams because they just can't cope, and the benefit system also is creaking at the seams. It just seems a bit back to front, everything, you know. This political correct world that we live in seems to... ignore its own and look after everybody else. And the country at the moment is basically full up. It's just a small island. I don't care if it's unpopular that I say it. I'll just tell it as it is, me, or as I see it. What does the panel think about that, please?
Good to have viewpoints, as always, Jason. Thanks for that. Panel?
There's room for 1.5 million housing properties in the UK if only they'd stop this brownfield nonsense. There's loads of space in the UK, even in the cities. And that's not the issue. Housing is the issue with people. It's a small country and we can't fit everybody in. If you can't fit everybody in, people wouldn't be there. People wouldn't go to... Earlier on we spoke, people that go to the UK in the main get jobs. In the main. The legal immigration into the UK, people go there because there are jobs available and they get jobs. You might not like the jobs, might not like McDonald's, but...
Andres.
Yeah. The housing problem is not as easy as you think in the UK, and I know it well. The problem there is what is needed is affordable housing. Now, affordable housing in a small island where it's very hard to find land where you can build makes the land very expensive. So no company is going to go and build something that then they have to sell at an affordable price. So to solve that problem is very, very difficult. I know some councils in the UK are doing well by using the council land to develop what they can, but certainly not enough to solve the problem of affordable housing.
They can't use council land just like that. It's not allowed. Brownfield sites are designated industrial sites, and you cannot build a house on an industrial site. So all you do is you need to change it from a brownfield site to a normal housing site, and you can build millions of properties. London alone could build over 1 million properties.
And we're going live to the lines. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning. It's Carol again.
Yes, Carol.
Just 2 points. I don't know what to ask the panel, but wasn't it when the British Empire was on the go, didn't our government at the time guarantee that each country that we controlled was guaranteed a British passport? That's the first one. Second one is everybody, if you couldn't afford a house, you got a council house. Under the rule of Maggie Thatcher, you could buy the council houses. Lots of people started buying council houses very, very cheaply. So the council houses, it was more profitable for the council to buy, sell the council houses than it was for people who couldn't afford them to get in and live in there.
Thanks for the call in there, Carol. Want to get
councils didn't want to sell their properties. It was forced upon them because it was the individual who lived in the council house who could apply, and it was the government ombudsman who then allowed them the opportunity to buy the property. So it was never something driven by councils, quite the reverse. And I worked for enough councils to know, you know, how devastated they were. And not only that, you can imagine what it's like in a tower block of 200 apartments and 10 people decide to buy their properties. Wow, just the nightmare of the sorting out the finances about who pays for the lift, who pays for the lighting, who pays all the communal stuff. Unbelievable. And, you know, and what they created was unfair as well. And I worked alongside one of the housing ministers, and all of the money that came in from the sale of council houses was ring-fenced. So no council even got the money from the sale of the council houses, and they weren't allowed to use that money to develop further councils' affordable properties. And one of the issues that did come in under Blair, was PFI housing. Right. PFI housing.
Let's go to the emails, which is studio@tre.radio. Fact, a vast majority of European immigrants come to work. Fact, they do not automatically get benefits. Thank you, Andreas, for vocalising that. Andreas, having another email. Andreas, having young workers, quote-unquote, as immigrants, depends on their skills and willingness to work or lack of. Some groups, i.e. Poles, Spanish, are generally good for the UK. Some other groups, absolutely not. Is that the reality of immigration? Also, preferably we should cling immigration. This is the needless demise of Europe. Crime crime swamps Sweden, but it's fine if we keep to the right areas. Which areas? Preferably we should all cling to those exclusive neighbourhoods where our EU elite and most of our other cosseted rulers live, having foisted this anti-European multicultural madness illustrated by the Sunday Times on far too many of our unwilling citizens. This is an article over the weekend. What have our people done to deserve this? Our elites, on the other hand, have betrayed their people by presiding over a Pandora's box of globalism with its insane immigration policies, its widening inequalities, its devastating financial, military, industrial complex, its postmodernist thinking, and its catastrophic weakening of the Judeo-Christian civilization. This is after an article appeared in the Sunday Times of the weekend saying, teens roam streets with rifles as crime swamps Sweden. The army may be called in to halt gang surge in immigrant areas. And also going back to the UKIP, UKIP was set up to fight immigration and as such will always be a racist organisation. Its membership, however, has now greatly fallen. Its supporters are actually jumping ship, and the party really has no purpose now. The current leader is like a ship's captain on a sinking ship going down like the Titanic. Another one saying, UKIP is about to disappear, the Conservatives are imploding, the Labour has swung to the extreme left and will be unelectable. Lib Dems are saying very little. We were just saying, where have Lib Dems gone? Nobody seems to be leading the UK now, and it is heading over a cliff edge very soon. Just have to hope someone with a genuine ability to lead emerges soon from any political party, but I can't think of a single current UK politician that is able to do so, other than a few who are really just a bit too old now. Past 50 has put on the end of that one. And at the bottom, and I'm going to the email, going to the Facebook page, we have Richard, who has said, this is, geez, this is really simple, guys. You can't discriminate against EU citizens. And also saying that that's on Talk Radio Europe Official. So lots to come back on there. Nathan?
Just going back to the question that one of the callers asked about the passports. No, the British government, when they had colonies, territories, whatever, all over the world, did not always, although they did sometimes, give the people of that country the option of getting a British passport. There were all different kinds of them. I know in Hong Kong, people in Hong Kong got a British Hong Kong passport, which gave them some rights, but it did not give them the right to go to the UK and live. In other countries, there were other designations of what, you know, they might have a British passport, but it was a limited British passport. And, you know, that's the only way I can answer that. I mean,
Hong Kong is a modern issue. The use and the giving away of British passports did go back to the time when the British Empire was in collapse. And the first part of it that started, it was India. And it was, first of all, they took the Indians, in the main Indians, to build the Suez Canal, to build the East African Railway, which is why you ended up with all the East African Asians. nearly every East African Asian, Kenya, Rhodesia, they were in, you know, a second British company. But in order to go from India, you know, these are the Punkawallas and the inspectors and the whatever who built the railways and then and the Suez Canal. And they were taken there by the British government and they were all given full British passports. And it's only when Idi Amin and others, you know, when Africa started going into its, we're blacks and we own the country, the first people that they always attack are the people with the money. And they weren't the Jews, although the Jews were there. It was the East African Asians because they owned all the businesses, all the shops, all the franchises. It was all East African Asians. And they effectively, up sticks, come to the UK. Millions, not a couple of hundred thousand, millions, legally. The second phase of the British passport and the circumstances it occurred was when India then went for independence. Anybody who was anything in the Indian civil service were under threat of death. So if you were a manager on the railways, for example, or if you ran the post office, or if you was in education, so all of those people, and I know many of them in the UK, all of those people were given British passports in order to escape death, effectively. But it was done in such a way, it was quiet. It wasn't, you know, here's your death passport or your avoidance of death. And when they come to the UK, these people, who in India were top civil servants, top people in India, you know, they ended up, no disrespect to my friends who live in Forest Gate, but they ended up in bedsits in Forest Gate and in Upton Park and in West Ham and in the run-down parts of East London. These were people of high esteem in India, came to next to nothing, but they're escaping death. So they were all given British passports. That's never been the problem. The problem was then we give it to the Chinese boat people, we give it to the Vietnamese boat people, we give it to, you know, escaping people from every war zone in the world. They all, you know, we give them, not all of them, but some of them, British passports, and they end up in Britain. They gave all the, when they changed the arrangements for the fire service, the firemen were all given accommodation in the old days. They took all that away because they wanted to move out to Essex and wherever, and they had all these houses left. Well, where I live, in Newham, Vietnamese boat people. All Vietnamese boat people. Every Vietnamese boat person that landed in London was put into these houses.
And it must have been a seamless translation between Saigon and Newham, obviously.
I don't know if they come from Saigon, because they were from much more south than that, because the boat people come from down nearer to Singapore than they did from up the north part. Where's Saigon?
I don't know. South Vietnam.
No, it's capital.
It was
about
south.
Midway, wasn't it?
No, that was.
Lots of the boat people didn't escape from there because the North Vietnamese went down to Saigon and stopped them. But beyond there, below there, is where a lot of the boat people come. So I'm told. And they went to. And we remember we had the Chinese boat people as well, the ones that were escaping from mainland China into that little, whatever they call that little bit of China that's an island, and then they escaped from there, and they all came into Britain because they were American passports and the UK passports, and in the main, they used both of them. But every country was told, you know, give your passports away. Sweden, which is why they've got a problem, Sweden gave loads of passports to these people. Loads of Asians went to Sweden, but they were acceptable because they weren't Polish. They weren't coming for a fight. They were coming to, you know, we want to do business.
952-78-4000, the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email, the Facebook page. Talk Radio Europe official, studio at TRE.com. Studio at TRE.radio is the email.
Nathan. Well, just the one thing. I mean, everybody wasn't giving out passports. I mean, maybe the British were. I know the Americans, I mean, they took in refugees, but they certainly weren't giving out passports. They were not full citizen,
Vietnam.
Huh?
Vietnam?
No. I mean,
some
of the
in Vietnam who were under threat were given American passports. There's nothing wrong in that, is there?
No. But I mean, you were making it sound like if the thousands of boat people were all just, here's your passport, and that was not the case by any stretch.
They were the illegal immigrants seeking refuge in a foreign country. Every country was supposed to take them in. The difference was, when they all arrived in London with 11 London boroughs, they were all supposed to take their share. But effectively what happens is that Westminster don't want any of them there, so they buy houses in Newham, where I lived, and put them in the houses in Newham. And I know I'm a Londoner, I lived this all my life. You want to see where they built Senegal? It's just round the corner to where I lived in Newham. And they put all the Senegalese who arrived in the UK, because they never had British passports, but they were refugees, and they were taken into the UK, and they were all housed. And I tell you what that did, that upset the indigenous population, who said, why are all these council houses being given to Senegalese who have just arrived in the country, and I've got two kids in a one-bedroom flat? You know, it caused almost... And I'll tell you what the political argument was in Newham, because I lived there and I was part of the politics. This is the People's Republic of Newham we're talking about, not some Tory land. And there was no Tories on the council. We had one oppositionist once for about 6 months. Other than that, it's 92 Labour or whatever stupid number, 62 Labour. And what they did is they put them all there. They said, it's because we keep them all together as a community. And you go, yeah. What's the other reason? It's because I lived on top of Docklands. Docklands was white land. White land was BNP. You want to undermine that, you ship in all sorts of people. So every block of council lump that came up, every house that came up, was housed by somebody who wasn't white and wasn't from England in the main, including the bus drivers, the nurses, all of them. And they were turning white land into non-white land, which created white flight. White flight is all the white people that lived in East London getting in their vans and cars and driving out to Essex to live. And if you go to South East London, the same applied there. Go to Kent, that's where they lived, or to Surrey, or to you know, Cambridge. You go all round, that's where the white people live.
Viewpoint
with Giles Brown.
Viewpoint Talk Radio. It's live and lively show, current affairs show, with a panel of invited guests joined today by Nathan Toss, Alf Brewer, excuse me, and Andres Gallardo. We've been looking at all things Brexit, all things immigration, but it's time to turn our attentions to somewhere closer to home here in mainland Spain. Of course, yesterday, Supreme Court Judge Pablo Llarena rejected a petition from Spain's top prosecutor to issue a European arrest warrant for Carles Puigdemont, saying the former Catalan leader was trying to provoke his arrest overseas with his planned trips to Copenhagen. Puigdemont's journey, which is included at a university debate and meeting Danish lawmakers, came nearly 3 months after he was removed from office and fled to Belgium. A warrant for his arrest remains open in Spain. Spanish authorities are investigating him and other Catalan officials for possible rebellion and sedition charges related to the regional parliament's October 27th declaration of independence. Catalonia's parliamentary speaker proposed him as a candidate shortly after Puigdemont arrived in Denmark to form a new government, despite his status as a fugitive. We could see a hologram, Andres, governing Catalonia from the safety of Denmark or Belgium.
The hologram is just, really is a joke. But, I mean, we've got technology, so why not use it? Let me just give you another quick overview of how I see things there, because I was in Catalonia not long ago, and I took a pulse of the local situation there. As you know, the elections went on a 50-50 split. Because of the electoral system, the pro-independence parties seem to have, or they have a majority in the regional parliament. Where does that take us? That takes us back 2 years, because what they're planning to do is to start the process all over again. In the meantime, we're going to have some entertainment from our good friend Pucci, who's
Pucci
first run away to Belgium. He chose Belgium very cleverly because he knew he couldn't be extradited on the main charges of rebellion and sedition. So he could only be extradited on the lesser charge. So the judge said, I don't want him for the lesser charge, I want him for the whole lot, like all the others who are still in jail. And now he's tensing the situation by going to Copenhagen. What's after this going to Copenhagen? I'm not quite sure. I think what he tried to do is just force an arrest so he could be voted in the president of the regional government. Now, because he hasn't been arrested, he won't be able to take charge of the position when he gets voted in. So the only option is to for him to be voted while he's in Belgium and run the regional government from Belgium, which will mean to put a plasma screen on the parliament or a hologram thing so he can do his duty as a president. Now, all the lawyers around the regional government have said, well, that's not viable. You cannot do that. But they're insisting that that's the way he's going to be. Now, the regional parliament there, they are known for breaking the rules and making their own rules as they go along. And that's what it seems they will do. So, clocks backward to 2015, let's start with the whole issue of creating independence. Now, let me just add something. The biggest problem there is that we and the rest of Spain and hopefully the rest of Europe can see that this is the wrong path to take, because independence cannot happen. They're going to come out of the European Union. The businesses have been flogging outside of the region. The reality is that 50% or close enough to 50% of the people really believe in this. It's a little bit like Trump. We here in Europe say Trump, he's so bad and so crazy and everything else. But the reality is the polls show that after a year in power, the guy is as popular as any of the presidents before. So I'm led to believe. I can see Nathan saying no, but no. So it's the reports that they're getting back from me. But in any case, it's
crap on the bottom of the issue.
50% of the people do believe in the independence of Catalonia, and that is not going away, because the next generation of voters are now being educated in Catalan schools, and they, in no time, I'm talking 5, 6 years, 10 years' time, that 50% is going to be 70, 80%. So the problem keeps going on and on and on.
But the one reality is, much as Catalonia is acting as if it can do anything it wants, it can't. I mean, it is, you know, still under Spanish law. It is, I don't know, are they still running it under 155? Or
they still run as a 155 until government is voted in.
And Rajoy is saying that he can't, unless he shows up in Spain and is in parliament, he can't be made the, I think it's president, but he can't be in charge. And so if they continue to do that, 155 will stay in and they won't be running Catalonia at all.
The problem is, I'm just highlighting the problem, I'm not agreeing with it. I'm just saying that people in Catalonia, these 50% of people, are really against 155. Yeah. And they are constantly mobilising to state their cause, despite being something that is outside the law. It's a problem that is not going away. That's what I'm trying to say. I mean, this is
exactly the same as we were talking about earlier. This is what the people believe. It doesn't matter what we think. It doesn't matter what reality is. It's what the people believe. And you said, you know, there'll be a new generation of people who come through the education system, and the education system will teach them this. I'm not so sure that the education system will be allowed to. I know from my kids who teach in Andalusia, the Spanish education system curriculum is under review as we speak. The national government are going to take much more control about what can and can't be taught in schools and about what is said. So you might have, you know, generations of youngsters who have been taught by their parents or by believers and otherwise, but if you run a whole program of, you know, killing the myths off, i.e. this isn't about the money, this isn't about this, the lies that were told by the independentists are lies. At the end of all of that, with the best will in the world, if 50% of the population still want independence, it's because that's what they believe in. They don't have to have a reason. They don't have to say it's because you've took our money or you've done this. They just say, we want to be independent because we think we'll be better off.
And they can keep saying that, but that doesn't mean they're going to get it.
Oh, absolutely, and they can't. And the process, which is what I was interested in what you said, it isn't going back 2 years. Because 2 years ago, when they started their process then, they knew they were going head-on with the government and they were not going to follow the process. Puigdemont himself said, we can't go back 2 years and not follow the correct process. If they follow the correct process, my understanding is that the whole of Spain gets a vote on whether Catalonia stays or goes, and they ain't never going to leave. So until they change the Spanish law, you know, the national law that says that's not correct, there is no way forward. So the only thing that you end up doing is, in Catalonia, yeah, you go back into the same as what they had, and it will result in the same process. Every time a group are elected, they're put in prison. Every time a group's elected, they're put in prison, until 50% of the population are in prison.
What? You can't run a region sending people to prison all the time. I mean, you can do it up to now, they've done it, but it obviously hasn't worked because the people continued to vote for independence. And they're up to 50%. Now, 10 years ago, the calculations were there were only about 25 to 28%. This is growing, and it's growing because they have control of the education system. All regions in Spain have got control of the education system, and in Catalonia, they're abusing the education system to indoctrinate children to become pro-independence when they grow up. These children are now will be 18, 20 in elections. They haven't been able to vote now, but that's going to continue to grow. I've seen it with my own eyes.
And they've just changed the law. They've just changed the law on the number of hours that Spanish kids have to be educated in a week. That's imposed nationally. What's the next step? They'll carry on with it. They'll carry on doing things to change the education system to stop the Catalonians doing their own thing. Otherwise, it means that everybody... You could have a region that could then say, well, actually, we're going to sit there and say we want everybody to be racist. Yeah, that ain't going to happen. And it ain't going to be allowed to happen in Catalonia. They're not going to be allowed to abuse the education system because they've been caught out.
They have been doing it for the last 30 years. They have been doing it for the last 30 years. And while these guys, they got the majority in Parliament, they will continue to support that education system, which is the support of their cause. And it is terrible because it's as close as you get to Nazi Germany, what we're seeing in Catalonia, as you can get.
Yesterday, when he was speaking to an auditorium at the University of Copenhagen, he said that he sought to regain his old job as president because the supporters of secession had won the most seats. And he said, if Catalans can't change their laws and leaders, that means there is no democracy in Catalonia and that Catalans will not surrender to authoritarianism. And he's becoming a bit of a... And also he was making reference to constitutional reform as he was in Denmark to the Faroe Islands and Greenland because they've been looking for further autonomy. So he's becoming, if you like, maybe he's going to be seeing his future role as the champion of autonomous regions throughout Europe.
And this isn't 1937. They're not going to ever go back into that. Say to the Catalonians, you've got a choice. You want independence, you've got to fight for it. No, I don't think they're going to take up arms.
This is exactly the point. You are on the verge of revolution because that is really the only answer they have at this point.
The worst thing about this guy at the moment is that he's swanning around Europe on a somehow paid holiday, telling the rest of Europe, or those who want to listen, that Spain is a terrible oppressor state, that we're living under the regime of Franco or worse, and is sending that message that it doesn't help Spain, obviously. The International Monetary Fund already reduced the amount of growth because of the Catalan issue. So the guy is just doing damage to Spain.
Puigdemont is just a mouthpiece. He is not clever enough to do this on his own. He's not clever enough or big enough or he hasn't got enough people to do this on his own. This is an organisation that's doing this. If I was to guess, I'd go, I bet you the Communist Party or the Communists from Russia are somewhere in the background funding this. So don't say, oh, he's on a paid holiday or something. He's being funded by an organisation. This is how these soft revolutions start. You need an organisation. You know, nobody became a dictator in any country in the world without an organisation behind them. I know they go, oh, he's a dictator, he's on his own. No, he's a dictator with 200 people behind him and a whole pile of thousands of people there supporting him.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Talk Radio Europe's live and loud and lively programme, as always, into the last 5 minutes or so of the show. 952-784-1000, studio at tre.radio, or Talk Radio Europe official being the Facebook page, joined by Nathan Thomas, Al Brewer and Andres Gallardo as my panel of invited guests. Where do you think the Pugy, as you now call him, some cartoon character from a children's novel?
He is a cartoon character.
Where do you think he goes from now then, or do you think he's only doing the European tour of autonomous regions?
He is going to manage to get elected as the head of the regional government. And the next move from government will be to go back to the 155 and say either you elect someone who can actually do the job or we will continue to run the region from Madrid. That's the likely outcome. Now, is that the best outcome? You are fueling the anger that exists in Catalonia by keeping the 155 in place. Yes, you have to keep the rule of law, but at the same time, my view, which has changed since I went there recently, is that we need to get out of this rut, really. I mean, they're going nowhere. They are so confronted, and the people in the street are so confronted that there's got to be something done to get out of this and go back to normality, if that can be achieved.
Going to go quickly to the lines, 952-784-1000. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
I'm sorry, it's Carol again. And very, very quickly, I'd like to ask Andreas, didn't the Basque people try to do this? And it now has failed.
No, the Basque country had some parties claiming for independence of the Basque country, but it was never supported as much as... at its peak, there was about 30% of support, so it never went further than that. Also, it was mainly backed by violent parties and terrorist organisations, so that wasn't going to go anywhere. The current level of pro-independence in the Basque country is calculated around 20%. So, no, the Basques have never taken... 50% on pro-independence. The problem...
Not even dealing with the percentages. They did not have the local government declaring independence in the Basque country. I mean, that's what did it. Percentages are something else. It was the government of Catalonia declared independence. That's what caused the problem.
The problem is that with these big decisions, and I'm going to bring Brexit again, like Brexit or independence of a region like Catalonia, you cannot take that on the basis of 50 plus one, because it's never going to work. You're going to have a breakdown. You're going to have a divided society. That's happening in the UK with Remain and some Brexiteers, and that would happen in Catalonia if they managed to declare independence. And that is an untenable position.
Never trust the public to make a decent decision.
Spoken like a true Labour man. Going to the phones for the one last time. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Charles. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Hey, Hans from Denia.
Good morning.
I just wondered that the super left is like Sharon or Kate didn't call in already after Alf's last statement. With the Communist Party being behind Puigdemont. But I think it was a very wise statement, because I just saw 2 days ago on the German TV and on the serious German TV, again, how much proof they have now. How much Putin was involved in the last German election, in the Austrian election, not even to talk about the American election or probably the Brexit as well, to destabilize the EU and the West as a total. And I think people should be really aware of this, because for me, the most dangerous people at the moment are not Trump or Kim Jong. This is Erdogan and this is Putin. And there is
Hans, the bongos have beaten us. Thanks for your calls in. It's been a great viewpoint. My thanks to my guest, Andres Gallardo.
Thank you, Giles.
Alf Brewer.
Nice to be back again.
Indeed, nice to have you back. And, as always, Nathan Thomas.
Thank you.
This programme will be repeated at 6 o'clock. Stephen Richardson up next.
The views expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe SL.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.